Yevamos Daf Yud Beis. We're on Yud Alpha Yud Beis. We're starting a third of the way down, beginning with the words Ba'aminei Rav Yehuda Mer Rav Sheshes. The Gemara is continuing its discussion regarding Machzik Rishasam Mishanises. As we already introduced yesterday, the Issur in the Torah in which a man, after having divorced his wife, and she goes and remarries another man, and after having divorced that second man, can she return back to her original husband? The Torah, in unequivocal terms, says no. It is a toeva. It is an abomination for a man to behave in that manner, and it's an issur in the Torah. With that stated, we saw yesterday a machlokus amongst the Tanaim in terms of when is this issur actually going to be generated. Does she need erusin with that second man, or does she need nisuin with that second man? And part of this machlokus Tanaim is going to be predicated on the phrase that's located in the parsha, the phrase acharei asher hutama, which is in the parsha, which certainly seemed to indicate that in order for there to be an Isser, she has to be defiled with the other man, meaning she has to have been with the other man. So that means Erisin and Nisuin. Meanwhile, the Chachamim are of the position that no, that just Erisin with another man is enough to generate this Isser. What do you do with the phrase Acharei Asher Hu Tama? So according to the Chachamim, it is not in relationship to a Machzik Rishasa, but rather it's in relationship to a Sota. And that means to say that you're going to take the phrase over here and apply it to Sota. So, that's already a good amount of information, and the Gemara's discussion over here is going to be revolved around what is the status regarding the co-wife of a Machzik Rishasa. That means to say that a man, after having married a woman illicitly, in other words, he took back Machzik Rishasa, Mishanises, which he should not have done, and then on top of that, he also had another wife as well, and he dies. So what is going to be the status of the tzara vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Yibum? Again, just as a reminder, regarding the Machzik Rishasa Mishanises, whether you follow the Pshita of the Chachamim or you follow the Shita of Yosef Ben Kippur, the marriage is still going to be an effective marriage, meaning despite the fact that you violated the Torah and you're not allowed to marry her, but nevertheless, this does not fall under the category of Erva. It's a law of the Torah. It's not in Parsha Tachremos. It's not in the Parsha of Arias. It is found in Parsha's Kiseitse. And as a result of that, it's only a love. And so that means to say that even though he violated the Torah in marrying her, but nevertheless, the marriage is recognized. And now the question becomes, if in fact he dies, and he leaves not only his Machshir Grushasam Mishanises, but on top of that also another woman as well, what is going to be the status regarding the Tzara? The balance of yesterday's daf is going to be discussing this very question. It's going to be asking this question again and again, with a number of different variations in terms of how to present this question. At the end of the sugya, which is going to end somewhere in the middle of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to leave the question off inconclusive, and at the end of today's daf, the Gemara is going to resolve the question. What is the status of the co-wife of our Machzik Rishasa vis-a-vis Yibum? Aliba de Rav Yosef ben Kippur lo tibay lach kevin damer Rav Yosef ben Kippur tumah b'machzik rushasa hu diksive tzarasa kemosa. So according to Rav Yosef ben Kippur, the answer would seem to be obvious. This is the first version of the Gemara's discussion. In that according to Rav Yosef ben Kippur, the expression of tumah is actually in the Parsha of Machzik Rishasa and is referring to the woman, the Machzik Rishasa herself. And the Torah describes her as tumah, as Rashi pointed out in yesterday's daf. So that means to say that even though she's not an erva, but she's an erva equivalent. We have the word tumah here in this context. We have the tumah used in the context of achrimos. So that means to say that she is an erva equivalent. Being that she's an erva equivalent, what we know, what we established already, is that an erva is not only going to pater herself, but pater the tzara from the mitzvah of Yibo. So as far as Rav Yosef ben Kippur is concerned, once we're keeping the term tumah in relation to Machzik Rishasa, so she is now going to be an erva, again, erva equivalent, and her tzara, of course, is going to be patra from the mitzvah of Yibo. Now, it's true also that it uses the expression of toevahi, but he toeva vei banet toavin. That is a miut, but that's only coming to exclude and preclude her children from having any blemish. Meaning, despite the fact that he violated Nisr marrying her, and despite the fact that the Torah uses the words toeva, but he, meaning only she, the principal, is going to be a toeva, but her children are not going to have any blemish whatsoever. As Rashi points out over here, her children can go ahead and marry Kohanim. But as far as the koef is concerned, the tzara is going to fall under this category of being a toeva, and therefore, again, going to be exempt and excused from the mitzvah of Yibum. Kiti balach aliba de rabban. The question becomes relevant towards the chachamim. Avagav damar rabban and tuma be sota hu dechsev. So again, referring back to yesterday's daf, according to the chachamim, the expression tuma is to be taken out of here, meaning not literally, but from a drush standpoint, the expression tuma is taken out of here and applies to a sota. And so, on one hand, according to the Chachamim, we lose the description, the adjective of sota, sorry, the adjective of tuma as it relates to the Maksa Grushoso. However, what you can argue is, in Mikra Yosei Midei Pshuta. On the other hand, we can't ignore the fact that the word tuma is used in this context, and that's a simple pshat, and that's referring to a Maksa Grushoso. Oh, Duma Kemendi Yakir Yakir, or maybe no. Maybe once we darshan it for the purposes of sota, so we're ma'akir, totally remove it from its context, not only from a drush standpoint, but even from a pashup shot standpoint. That is all but one possibility. Gemara has now a second version of how to express this. Here in the second version, we're going to start off that according to the Chachamim Davar Pashut, once the word tumah is used for the drush of sota, it is taken out of this context, both from a drush standpoint, even from a shot standpoint. Kiti by lach libid Rav Yosef and Kippur. My avagav dam Rav Yosef and Kippur tuma machzer gushasuhu diksive. Now it's true that tuma is written in relationship to machzer gushasu. However, miut rachmana he toeva ve'ein tsarasa toeva. On the other hand, we do have the miut of he, and maybe the he is coming to exclude the tsara, and that means to say that only the principal, only the machzer gushasu herself, is considered an abomination, but not the tsara. Or maybe no. The miyut over here is not in relationship to the tzara, but it's in relationship to her children. But as far as the tzara is concerned, the tzara is considered toeva. So what we have now on the table in two different formats is the question of whether or not the co-wife of a machzer grushaso is in fact going to be subject to the mitzvah of yibum or going to be excused from the mitzvah of yibum. And to oversimplify the Gemara's discussion over here, it really boils down to a question of, is our machzer grushaso going to be considered a erva equivalent enough in order to patur the tzara? Tinisua, so the Gemara says, amalei tinisua. So to the answer to this question, so the Gemara is going to try to make a couple of diukim from a couple of mishnayos. First, a mission that's coming up later in our mesechta, haisa achas ksher v'achas psulim, haya cholitz cholitz l'psulim, haya miyam miyam l'ksherah. A brisa that we're going to be seeing later in our mesechta discusses what happens now if two women become eligible for the Yavam to perform the mitzvah of Yibam. As we already discussed numerous times in the Amar Sechta, the mitzvah is only to be done with one of them. One of them is being described as a ksher, the other one is being described as a psula. What do you do under those circumstances? Well, if he just opts to do chalitza, do it with the pasul. If he opts to do Yibam, do it with the kshera. This brisa needs explanation, and the Gemara now is going to at least suggest. My kshera, my psula. Ilay mksheru kshera l'ama, psula psula ama. And maybe kshera and psula over here just simply means that in general, one is kosher to the world and the other is pasul to the world. What does that mean? Rashi explains. When we say pasul to the world, we mean that let's say, for example, she's disqualified to marry Kohanim. For example, she happens to be a grusha. Now, how could she be a grusha? In other words, right now she's a widow. But the answer is very simple. From a previous marriage, she ended in divorce, so she has now a divorce status. And then she married this guy, and this guy unfortunately died. So now, she currently is a widow, but previously she was a grusha. So in this regard now, she is a yibum slash chalitza candidate, but at the very same time, because she was previously divorced, so she is now forbidden to marry a kohen. From the standpoint of the yavam right now, the yavam currently is not a kohen. The yavam is just simply a regular yisrael, and from his standpoint, it really doesn't make a difference. And the Gemara now makes exactly this point. Vis-a-vis the Yavam himself, it doesn't matter, so why should it make a difference? So the Gemara therefore now gives an alternative shot. Kshera psula over here mean relative to him, the Yavam. How can one be kshera and the other one be psula? Machzer grushaso. So it's got to be a case of machzer grushaso. It's got to be. Well, as the Gemara in a moment is going to point out, it doesn't have to be, but it certainly seems to be a likely candidate. Why? Because if one is an erva, the other one saras erva, and then you can't call one ksher and the other one psula. They're both going to be psula, or they're both going to be disqualified to him. We're looking now for a case in which, at least relative to him, one is eligible and the other one's ineligible. So the Gemara right now is at least suggesting that we're talking about the case of one of them being Machzer Grushaso and the other one being the co-wife of Machzer Grushaso. Now, assuming that we're correct, what comes out over here is that Yimum is going to be performed, but with the Kshera, which means that you are, in fact, allowed to do Yimum with the co-wife of the Machzer Grushaso. If this is all correct, so then we have an answer to a question. Lo. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you don't have to say that as a pshat. In fact, we can offer a different pshat. We're going to go back to what we originally suggested. La'olam k'shera k'shera la'ama p'sula p'sula ama. And what we mean is that what we originally presented, one of them is just a widow, and the other one is a widow divorcee. And previously we said, well, assuming now that our yavam is not a kohen, what difference does it make? So Mishum to Rav Yosef, Damar Rav Yosef, Kanchan Rebbe, Lo Yishpoch Adam, Eibar Rav Acher, and Tzrichim Lehem. This goes back to a point that we are going to be making later in the Masechta, and the Gemara is reviewing it right now, and that is be a mensch. Now, that is not a literal translation of the Gemara, but it is basically what the Gemara's point is. And that is as follows. You have two women now, of which you're going to be either doing Yibam or Chalitza to one of those two women. Now, if you do Yibam to one of them, so then obviously you'll elect which one you want to do it with. However, if you're going to be doing Chalitza to one of them, and that means to say that they are both now going to be excused and be able to marry other men because you're not interested in marrying either one of them, so which one should you do Chalitza? Well, at first glance, it really doesn't matter. But then the Gemara says, upon further consideration, no, it does matter. Because in this particular case, one of them is already a Grusha, which means that one of them is already disqualified to marry Cohen, while the other one currently is not disqualified to marry Cohen. So really, it does make a difference which one you do Chalitza to. In that, if you did Chalitza to the non-divorcee, you have now made two women ineligible for Kohanim. If, on the other hand, you did Chalitza to the divorcee, so now she already is disqualified for Kohanim, you're not going to be adding any more disqualification to her, and the one who's just a widow still now has the eligibility, the ability to go ahead and marry a Kohen. And so, being that it doesn't cost you anything, and you are now allowing a woman the potential, the possibility of having more eligible candidates to marry, so obviously, be a mensch. The expression the Gemara uses over here, Kanchan Rebbe, from this Mishnah, Rebbe teaches us that a person should not pour out the extra water that he has in his pit, and other people need the water. Meaning, if you have extra water, and you're going to be spilling it out anyway, don't spill it out, but rather, let other people use it. And anyway, you are going to get rid of it. Okay. Tashma. Gemara is going to try and make a deal for me. Another Braisa. The Braisa, the way at first it's presented, is unreadable. You have a Machzer Grushaso, and again, Mishanises, meaning that she married in the interim, which, again, you should not have, you shouldn't have married her. Meaning, you divorced her, she went ahead and married another man. You then, after that marriage terminated, you then wanted to take her back. The Torah says not to do so. You violated the Torah. You remarried her. Again, Machzer Grushaso Mishanises. So as far as now what happens in the event that this husband dies, leaving her and a co-wife, he vitzarasa choletzis, you do chalitza to both her and the co-wife. As the Gemara right now readily admits, the Braisa is unreadable. You do chalitza to one of them, not both of them. He vitzarasa sakadacha el ema, ohi, o tzarasa. Either she or the co-wife. V'lav terutzika mataratzala, so it's terutzachis. So the Gemara says, look, anyway, what you had to do is you had to edit the Braisa. As long as you're editing the Braisa anyway, so let's say the following pshat in the Braisa. He choletzis sarasa, o choletzis amesia bemis. As far as she's concerned, so you can only do chalitza tar. As far as the co-wife is concerned, you could do chalitza or yibel. Admittedly, we're adding a lot in the Braisa, but the Braisa already proved to be a somewhat compromised Braisa. It's a little bit corrupted. So the Gemara says, as long as we're going to edit it, we can edit in this manner. So again, from this Braisa, we really don't see one way or another. The Gemara now is going to go through a second round of this discussion of Machzer Grushaso. We're just going to be discussing it in a slightly different format. I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan Bayi. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba brings down a Mesorah in terms of a question that was posed by Rabbi Yochanan, Machzer Grushaso, Mishanisei, Sarasa Mahu. So once again, same story. Machzer Grushaso, Mishanisei. He shouldn't have married her. He did. He dies leaving her as a widow together with a co-wife. What is going to be the status regarding she and the co-wife vis-a-vis Yibum? Amale Rabbi Ami v'tibay lachi gufa. Why are we asking about the co-wife? Why not ask about the actual machzor grusha herself? He gufa lo kami bailei. The Gemara goes on to explain. The reason why we're not asking regarding the actual machzor grusha is because it seems to be obvious. Da'amrin kava chomer, because over here we can make the following logical argument. B'mota lachasura ba'asor la lo kol shekein. Consider. From the standpoint of the machzor grusha, was she able to marry her husband again? And the answer is no. And that's a man who she was originally permitted to. And now you want to ask the question of whether or not she can go ahead and marry the Yavam, a man who she never was permitted to marry, meaning the moment that she first married her husband originally, her brother-in-law now to her is an Esh Yisach. Now, yes, it's true. There was a Yibum, not possibility, but there was a potential of Yibum in the event that he died. But still, before that point in time, her brother to her was Esh Yisach. So, it can't be that she's prohibited to her husband, who she originally was permitted to, and meanwhile, she's going to be permitted to her Yavam, who she originally was prohibited to. So the Gemara says it's a Kav HaChomer. So, Ki Kami Ba'ilei Tzarasa. So, as far as the Machzor Grushasa is concerned, Kav HaChomer would dictate you're not allowed to marry, not allowed to do the mitzvah of Yibum. On the other hand, regarding the Tzara, we can ask the following question. My, Mi'alam Kav HaChomer Lemidchei Tzara, is a Kav HaChomer so strong that it's even going to push off the co-wife as well? Meaning the Kav HaChomer basically will tell me that our Machzor Grushasa is equivalent to an erva. Again, it goes back to the same point that we made in the first round of this discussion. How prohibited is the Machzor Grushasa? Is she an erva equivalent? So if in fact she's an erva equivalent, so now we could say that the Tzara now is the Tzara's erva. Olo, or maybe not. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Masni Hachi, the Gemara has another version of this discussion. I'm Rabbi Chia Bar Abba by Rabbi Yochanan Machzor Grushasa Mishinesis Mahu. I'm Alei Rabbi Ami B'tibay Lach Tzarasa. So here in the second version, we're asking regarding the Machzor Grushasa. The Gemara says, why don't you ask about the Tzara? So Tzarasa lo kami b'alei d'loi l'm kav hachomer l'mitchei Tzara. Because it's true that we do have a kav hachomer l'gabe, the Machzor Grushasa herself, but that kav hachomer is only relevant to the Machzor Grushasa. It doesn't relate to the Tzara. Ela ki kami b'alei hi gufa. But as far as who we're going to be asking, we're going to be asking about the actual principal herself, the Machzor Grushasa. So my mialim kav hachomer b'makom mitzvah. Olo. On one hand, the kav hachomer would certainly dictate that she should be prohibited to her brother-in-law. On the other hand, here you have a mitigating factor, notably the mitzvah of Yibum. And maybe the mitzvah of Yibum is going to be overriding the kav hachomer. So again, same question. Over here, we're just asking from the perspective of the Machzor Grushasa as opposed to asking from the perspective of the Tzara of the Machzor Grushasa. From this point going forward, as we're now on the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to be answering the question, or at least attempting to answer the question, using the same two braises that we used in round one. So what at this point in time I'll do is I'll just read through the Gemara really quickly with the explanation, see above. Amarle tenisua isachas ksheravachas psula im haya cholis cholis psula vim haya miyam miyam bilik sherem my ksherem my psula. Elim ksher ksher lama psula psula ama kevan deli dedechaz yamay nafkale mina. Elalav ksher ksher lay psula psula lay. Umayni umachzor grushasa vikatani im haya miyam miyam bilik shera lo. Ksher lama psula ama. Udeka amar kevan deli dedechaz yamay nafkale mina. Mishum de Rav Yosef, Dam Rav Yosef, Kan Shana Rebbe, Lo Yishpoch Adam Bein Baro, Ba'achem Shrichem Lehem. Tashma Machzor Grushasa, Mishani says, He Vitzarasa Choletzes. He Vitzarasa Sakadacha, El Eimo, Ohi, O Tzarasa. Velav Terutze Kamitarasa La, Terutzachi, He Choletzes, Sarasa, O Choletzes, O Mesia Bemis. So again, for an explanation, just go back to the beginning of Shir, where we basically went through the exact same, not basically, we went through the exact same Shakla Vitarya in terms of these brisas, seemingly elucidating as to whether or not one does Yibum to the co-wife of the Machzor Grushasa. Once again, each of the proofs are deflected in the same exact manner that we did in the first round of the discussion. Next. Gemara now is going to be discussing the co-wife of a Mamenes, a woman who did Mion. This is the first time in the Masechta that we're going to be talking about Miyam. The Gemara did reference this a little bit earlier in the Masechta, but here we're going to be discussing Miyam more formally. The truth of the matter is, later in the Masechta, we're going to be discussing Miyam even more formally. There is a perek here in this Masechta dedicated to the topic of Miyam that comes up, I believe, in the 13th perek of our Masechta. But at least right now, we're going to be discussing in some detail. So let me just give a quick background to Miyun. As far as Miyun is concerned, so literally the word means to refuse. What's happening is the following. In the event that a woman is married on a rabbinic level, how is a woman getting married on a rabbinic level? So in the following circumstance, she's a minor and she no longer has a father. If the minor has a father, so he's going to be able to marry her, and the Torah affords him the opportunity, the right to marry her off. And despite the fact that she does not have das, so the Torah awards the father the ability and the right to marry off his minor daughter. However, in the event that there's no father, so me ikar adin now, this woman cannot get married until she's an adult. Until she is 12 years of age and she has das, so me ikar adin, this woman cannot get married. However, the chachamim at the time, and for most of history, when men and women got married at a very young age, so recognize and realize the fact that if you have a woman who does not have a father and is not going to be married, so she will have no one looking out for her, no one protecting her. So what the chachamim afforded is another family member, either a mother or a brother, to marry her off as a minor. Now, the Torah does not afford either one of them to marry off. The Torah only gives the father the right to marry her off. But nevertheless, this is a rabbinic grant, a rabbinic right that's given to either another family member, either the brother, the mother. This marriage that's effected is only operating on a derabbanan level. At the same time, the Chachamim also gave the girl the following ability, that as she becomes an adult, she can then, if she decides to, simply annul the marriage, what's called miyun. She could refuse, and she could just simply say that I do not want it. Later in the Masechta, we will speak out exactly how this process is done, when this process is done. Right now, what we need to know is that miyun can be done by this girl under these circumstances, and that will annul the entire marriage. That means to say that the marriage never happened. Despite the fact that they were together and they were intimate with one another, nevertheless, as far as an institution of marriage is concerned, since it is a nisuin derabbanan, the Chachamim, under these circumstances, gave the right to be okir, to simply uproot the marriage altogether. This is what is called miyun. The Gemara now is going to be discussing Amar Rav Lili Bar Mama, Amar Mar Ukva, Amar Shmuel, Tzaras Mamenes, Asura. So the co-wife of a Mamenes is going to be Asur. That means to say the following has occurred. Man has married two women, one of them a gedola, the other one's a katana. And again, the katana that he married was done in this context of not the father marrying off, but rather either a brother or a mother marrying off. In other words, it is a kedushe derabbanan. Then this man died, leaving these two now for the mitzvah of yibum. So according to Shmuel, the co-wife of the mamenes is prohibited. She is not going to be able to do the mitzvah of yibum. Now, this needs clarification. Why should it be? So let's see the Gemara inside as the Gemara is going to explain. Leman. Ilem ala achim. So the Gemara says, now, as far as the co-wife is concerned, she's prohibited to who? She's prohibited now, let's say, to the brothers, meaning the other brothers other than the Yavam. So the Gemara says, can't be. Hashahi gufa sharya damer Shmuel. Now, Shmuel is about to teach us there is no possible way to even suggest for a moment that the co-wife of the Mamenes is going to be prohibited to the brothers, considering the fact that the Mamenes herself is going to be permitted to the brothers. Gemara is about to explain. Miana bezem mutaris bezem. The halach is as follows. She does mean to one of the brothers. Now, again, let me explain this a little bit better, because admittedly, this part gets a little bit confusing. Her husband died. And now she's doing miyun to the Yavam? Why? Or how? The answer is actually pretty straightforward. Because when her husband dies, so under normal circumstances, that would just simply terminate the marriage as she now is a widow. On the other hand, because there is a mitzvah of Yibum, so now what's happening is that Zika now is taking her current marriage and just simply extending it now to the brother. In other words, the brother is being mamshich. He's just continuing the marriage of her, the marriage of her former husband. So that means to say that just like she had the ability to reject her original husband, she now has that ability to reject the Yavam as well, because the Yavam is coming basically as proxy of of the deceased brother. So here's what we're learning together. That according to Shmuel, when in fact she does mian to her yavam, so now what that is going to do is that that's going to retroactively now annul her original marriage. In fact, Shmuel's of the position. Now, again, in later in the Masechta, we're going to be discussing this in more detail. And there's more than one position on this matter. But for now, all we need to do is focus on Shita Shmuel. Shmuel's of the position that once she does mian to the Yavam, she may not marry him. However, she may in fact marry any one of the other brothers. Any one of the other brothers. Aren't they Ashes after her? And the answer is no. Once she did mian, that uproots the marriage, annuls her original marriage. And so despite the fact that she was with the brother, but she was never married to the brother. And that allows her to marry any one of the surviving brothers. Now, if this is true regarding the principal, regarding the one who did mian, so ostensibly, it would be true by any of the co-wives as well. That's exactly the Gemara's point. So, miana bezet muteres bezet sarasami baye. So it goes without saying that the co-wife for sure would be in a position where she can marry any one of the brothers. So Ella Lididei. So we're talking about to the Yavam herself. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Well, as far as Shmuel's position is concerned, our Mamenes can marry any one of the other brothers because she didn't do an action vis-a-vis any of the other brothers. So it's our Nami Lo Avdebu Maisa. But meanwhile, the co-wife didn't do an action vis-a-vis the Yavam. So once again, shouldn't the co-wife be able to marry the Yavam? Now, again, let's remind ourselves that once the Mamanis does Mion, so that uproots her marriage, leaving now only one widow. And that one widow ostensibly now should be able to perform Yibum with the Yavam. So the Gemara says, Gzera Mishum Saras Bito Mamanis. So the Gemara says, well, Me'ikar Adin, you're 100% correct. The reason why it is prohibited is because of a Gzera Drabanan. The Gemara says we're concerned about the co-wife of the daughter who does Mian. That needs clarification. We're going to get it. Vitzaras Bita Maminas Miasiri. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. Is that really prohibited? Vatanan. We're going back to our Mishnah. Vekulan. In every one of the cases. So remember, we had 15 cases in the Mishnah. Remember, the first of the 15 cases is the case of the daughter. So Im Mesu. O Mianu. If either they die or they did Mian, so then it's Sarasem Mutaris, meaning if the Erva is not married anymore at the time of the death of her husband or first husband, so then obviously the Erva is taken out of the equation, and then the co-wife, which by definition is no longer a co-wife, is allowed to perform the mitzvah of Yibum. Now, reading the Mishnah carefully, either the Erva died or the Erva did Mian. Now, we're talking about any of the Arayas, and there are 15 to choose from. But we're going to be focusing right now just strictly on the daughter. The daughter did Mian. Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, and this requires a little bit of an explanation. The daughter is doing Mian to whom? Well, she was married to her father's brother. Her brother, her husband died, right? Her uncle slash husband died. And now what we're describing is she's doing Mian to her father. Now, this can be confusing because, as I explained at the front end of this whole discussion, if there's a father, so then the father marries her off, then there is no option for Mion because that marriage is operating on a Doraisa level. So how could it possibly be that she's doing Mion to her father? Isn't that by definition impossible? So normally the answer to that is yes. As Rashi points out over here, there is a circumstance in which Mion can be done to one's very own father. How could that be? So Rashi points out what happened was is that the father married her off as a minor. She got divorced as a minor. She does not return back to her father. But what happens now is that she is in this very strange halachic situation of being an independent minor. Under those circumstances, the father no longer has the ability to marry her off. Still, the Chachamim gave the right to either the mother or the brother to marry her off. They did so, and they married her off to the uncle. So now you have a situation in which she's married to the uncle with the ability to do mian. And again, in the event that the uncle dies, she's going to be doing mian to her very own father. Admittedly, that's a strange scenario, but it's possible that that can happen. The Gemara now wants to know, when we go back to our Mishnah and we're reading about any one of the Arayas, and again, we're focusing on the Bito, who's doing miyun, she's doing miyun to whom? Demiyun abeman. Ilem demiyun abeba'al. If she did miyun to her husband, hayna grusha. Well, isn't that the same thing as a grusha? So, alala biyavan. So, in other words, it can't be that she did miyun to her husband, because then there is simply no difference between doing miyun to your husband versus divorcing your husband, meaning it results in the same. So it must be the Mishnah, which is obviously there to give us a chiddush, is talking about where she did miyun to her yavam, which in this particular case is her father. So the Gemara says lo. Well, before we get to the lo, in other words, so if in fact she's doing miyun to her father, so now what comes out is something a little bit strange, in that she did miyun to her father, and yet what we're learning together is that she obviously is out of the picture because that uprooted her marriage. At the same time, however, the co-wife is allowed to now go ahead and perform the mitzvah of yibum with her brother-in-law. Meaning, remember, the co-wife is not related to the father. In other words, it's a co-wife. So she's in fact allowed to do the mitzvah of yibum with her yavam. So if in fact all this is true, this now goes against what the Gemara suggested. The Gemara says, why is the co-wife of a mammon is not allowed to do yibum? The answer right now is that mi ikar din she is, but it's gzera derabanan. What's gzera derabanan? For a concern of the case of tsaras bito mammonis. We just concluded tsaras bito mammonis is in fact permitted. In other words, we read the Mishnah, and the simple reading of the Mishnah would indicate that's permitted. So the Gemara says, lo, la olam ba'al. So the Gemara says, no. We are talking about a case where the Mishnah is talking about a case where she did miyun to her husband. So vitrei gavni gerushin. Now, what was your problem? The problem with that is that, isn't that the same as gerushin? The Gemara says, yeah, it's basically the same. You're right. The Mishnah was just simply illustrating either divorce or miyun, but either one of them. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand, but of course I don't understand. Here's what we're saying. If our mom Ennis did miyun to her original husband, so that annuls the marriage. So the halacha views it as if they were never married. And so that only leaves now the other wife. And fine. And now, assuming, of course, that she's not related to her yavam, she'll do the mitzvah of yibum. And if our mom Ennis did miyun to the yavam, it would result in the same result, meaning it uproots. What does it uproot? It uproots her original marriage. If in fact it uproots her original marriage, it should be the same result. Effectively, the Gemara wants to know, what difference does it make whether she's doing miyun to her original husband or she did miyun to the avam? Either way, it's uprooting her original marriage. Gemara goes on to explain. Mishum d'nirami bar yecheskel, d'nirami bar yecheskel, mimana babal. If a woman did miyun to her husband, she's allowed to, at a later point in time, marry the father of her husband. Now, of course, under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to marry the father of your husband, but we're talking about miyun. What does miyun do? Miyun annuls. So over here, if she did miyun to her husband, she can ultimately marry the father of the husband because everyone understands and recognizes what miyun accomplishes. Miyun uproots the marriage. However, be yavam, but if our woman did miyun, woman over here meaning katana, if the woman did miyun to her yavam, that means to say that her husband died. And now she's thrown to the yavam to do the mitzvah of yibum. And she does miyun to the yavam. So then asur la aviv, she's going to be prohibited to her husband's father. Now, why? Because of the following, there's a perception that's created. Meaning, as the Gemara said just moments earlier, when she does miyun, it doesn't matter whether she did miyun to her husband while he was alive, or if he did it to the yavam after the death of her husband. In both circumstances, what it does is it uproots the marriage. The Gemara says that meikar din, that is in fact what's happening in both cases. However, when she does miyun to her original husband, it is well understood and correctly understood by everybody that that is going to uproot the marriage. However, when she does miyun to her yavam, so because yibum now threw her at her brother-in-law, and even though her miyun would in fact uproot her original marriage, but from a perception standpoint, from the way people view this scenario, they will see the marriage as being a more legitimate marriage. it isn't any more legitimate marriage had there been or had there not been Yibam. But because there was Yibam, and because Yibam basically forced her to confront her brother-in-law, and even if she does Miyun to her brother-in-law, still the perception is created that there was in fact a marriage. It is Niris Kakalasa. It now looks like if in fact she ever opts to decide to marry her late husband's father, it looks like basically she's marrying her father-in-law. Not me ikir hadin, but at least from a perception standpoint. So hachinami mishas nefila nearest kitzaras bito. Same thing over here. Because Yivam now forces her to confront her brother-in-law, and even though the Mian uproots the marriage, but because Yivam occurred, it creates a perception. That perception makes it look as if they were in fact married, and that's why the Chachamim were goes there in such a scenario. And not only were the Chachamim goes there in the scenario of Saras Bito Mamenis, but in any case of Saras Mamenis, the Chachamim were goes there in such a situation in such a scenario. Okay, we're going to stop over here. I know we're a little bit behind, but we're going to pick it up tomorrow morning. Over here, finishing up Yud Beis and getting through a good part of Yud Gimel. Okay, let's quickly recap. Two discussions that we had over the course of the daf. One is a conclusion of yesterday, taking us into today's daf, and that is the question of the co-wife of Machzer Grushas Mishinises. And the question effectively is, Machzer Grushas Mishinises, despite the fact that not an erva, but nevertheless may in fact be an erva equivalent, and to what degree is she an erva equivalent, and to what degree is the co-wife of an erva equivalent, or to put it in other terms, what degree of mitzvah is there going to be of Yibum for the co-wife of Machzer Grushas Mishinises? Our second topic in the daf is going to be Eitz Haaretz Mamenis, the co-wife of a Mamenis. Despite the fact that Miyun, whether done to her original husband, or even whether done to the Yavam, Miyun is going to uproot the marriage, it will annul the marriage, expunge it. Nevertheless, the Chachamim made Gzera, at least according to the Shita of Rav Lili Bar Mamal, in the name of Shmuel, the Chachamim made Gzera. The fact that she is now forced to confront her Yavam and respond to the Yibum situation, so it gives more of an appearance of marriage. So since under those circumstances it gives the appearance of marriage, so the Chachamim made Gzera that that the co-wife of a Mamenis is not allowed to do Yibum. Those are the two positions that we covered. Tomorrow we'll start with Saras Ilanis.